Welcome to the 75th Monk on My Back podcast. Contact us at monkcast@gmail.com to leave comments and contributions. Stand around our spinning orders, discuss some sad news, listen to some excellent contributions, and in this week's Spotlight, James Talk takes a break from Tintin to talk about Sarah Gliddon's How to Understand Israel in 60 Days or Less. Momcast, the comic book podcast that at this point in the introduction likes to insert a mildly satirical joke. Around the mic tonight are...
Hi, I'm Nick.
Hi, I'm Edith.
Never
Bowman.
Doing that again. Hi, I'm Jane.
I'm sorry. Hello, listener. Just in case you're wondering why James and I are a little bit fractious and distracted, it's because we've just spent ages messing around with the technology, which
about
just hasn't
an
been
hour.
Working.
45 minutes.
Yeah, and inexplicably it wasn't working. And inexplicable means we don't really understand how it works in the first place. It's like witchcraft, frankly. And then while Jane was very, very professionally trying to get through her intro there, the printer was powering down, and it was amusing. You might not have been able to hear that, but it was all James and I could hear.
And I think Jane called it the Blonky on My Back podcast.
Yeah,
as
I
well,
did. So and then he laughed at me. I can't. I'm renaming the podcast.
Blonky.
Blonky.
Blonky on My Back.
Yeah, it sounds more fashionable.
Branding. We were on the cusp of critical and commercial success, so yeah. It seems like a good time to rebrand.
Totally. Well done for that, Jane. Thank
Blonky.
You.
Thanks. Blonky. Yeah, sorry I had to edit the script, but, you know.
Actually, fine. You hardly changed anything. Yeah.
I changed
James's
bits of...
Script
I put commas
more.
In my head when I was reading it out, so it was all right-ish.
Maybe I don't want you to read it with commas. Maybe that's why I write it without commas. Did you ever think of that, lady?
I tried to read it without commas, and you saw what happened.
How many of the podcasts have we done now? We've done 75 now. How many of them started with a five-minute... assassination of my script writing abilities.
Every single one.
About you. Six or seven at least that I can think of right now.
Ungrateful little shits.
Yeah.
Yes.
And even the ones where we didn't actually verbally assassinate it, we'd already edited the thing to hell so we could say it.
You
can write this stuff, James.
Nick, shut up.
Fucking say it.
What have you done with your week?
I was round at a friend's house at the weekend watching films. That's
Lay sound like an idiot.
Yeah.
Two very good films, fine selection of films.
Yeah,
totally.
Their floor was nice as well.
Yeah.
But they were a twat.
It was a floor party, and you failed the dinner party test as well, didn't you?
What did I do?
I don't know, you just failed, I decided. We were keeping scores.
All right. Oh, I wasn't keeping score. I thought everything you two said was delightful.
Well, what did pass the dinner party test? It's now acceptable to, in polite society...
Watch Muriel's Wedding.
...to insult delusional Australians.
Oh, yeah. Yeah, that's okay. That's absolutely fine.
And slightly slutty Australians that get back cancer.
God.
It was.
You know the actress actually got back cancer during and that's... No, it isn't really a documentary.
Nick.
That's a terrible thing to say.
That was
I loved it. I thought she was very
You're
good.
You're terrible,
I
Nick.
I thought it was a delight.
It was a delight.
What
a
coincidence.
Lovely film, yes.
But it was good. And thank you, Jane. For that. And the chilli was very nice, so thank you, James.
Oh, that
afterthought,
was
thank
that.
You.
Very nice food.
And so was the cake. I believe that was brought in.
Oh, yeah, the cake. I forgot.
The cake
I
was very nice,
but
that was brought in.
I had the...
You didn't have any cake. You, eat everything.
Nicola provided some pavlova for her.
Yes, I don't eat cake or turkey.
My favourite person at the whole thing, and bearing in mind my wife was there as well, was Scarlett Mong.
She is delightful.
She's far, far... Basically, she is proof that the human race gets better and better because she is so much better than her father. So much. And he's awesome. He's cuddly. But she's...
I'm surprised you say that, because I haven't met him yet. so
haven't you?
What else happened? My wife Amy is away because it's half term. She's spending some time with our niece, our new niece up in where they are. So I've been on my own, and I'm actually disoriented and delirious and quite tired because I don't. It's probably, how many holidays has she had while we've been doing this? It's probably become 18. It's probably fairly obvious to people now that I don't really cope very well when she's not here. I become unfocused and don't.
I think Jane and I proper meals. Jane and I certainly feared her in the momcasts when Amy's away.
Yeah, it's because she gives you a lift home.
No, it's because she. I don't fear well. It's called walking, isn't it? I don't fear walking, it's your delirium that terrifies me.
You're out of sync because Amy's not here.
That's what it is.
At least the dogs aren't barking this time. He was really fretful, wasn't he, last time? Amy's away.
My dogs are barking.
And the dogs, mine are actually. My feet are very sore.
But yes, so I apologise if I'm a little bit low wattage today.
That's okay. Well, let's move on to Jane very quickly and leave Nick to wallow in his own self-pity.
Okay. Are you playing music and you had Nick while you're wallowing?
Yeah, it's the music from the end of the Hulk TV series. So if I start crying, that's why.
Apparently.
I too ate delicious food and watched films in with good company. I developed a hole in my top yesterday, which I didn't identify until halfway through the day. And was quite embarrassed about it because of the position of the hole. And no, it wasn't a position of the hole to put my arms or head through. It was a hole that was not supposed to be on the top.
Was it a tummy button hole?
No, it was higher.
Was it a booby button hole?
Yes, it was, Nick.
So, it was cheered me up a little bit.
But yeah, I'm sure it cheered up the people in the meetings I had with that morning. They're probably laughing at me going, look at that hobo girl.
Is that the same as when I got to a meeting today and I realised one of my buttons was undone on my shirt and you could see a bit of my big fat belly?
Possibly, yeah.
There was an epidemic of clothes disintegrating over the last few days, but I am not taking credit. Despite the fact that I have been developing over the years as part of my evil plan to take over the world, a virus that will eat through clothes, but that I have clothes that
isn't
are
that
immune
in Red Dwarf?
It. Is it?
Yes.
I don't know. I stopped watching it after the second series.
Oh right, yeah.
Was it in one of the other nine series?
Series 8.
Ooh.
Episode.
I
just make it up.
Episode.
There'll be people out there who know.
Yeah. At one point, I probably would have known as well.
Ooh.
I forgot.
But so your clothes have been falling off, and there have been a few people who seems to have been in the same situation. What about you, James?
Me, I had some friends over at the weekend. I think we've spoken about that more enough. It's very nice, though. Really enjoyable company.
Were any of them quite manly and very well versed in critiquing floor related DIY?
Well, yeah, no. Our friend Steve seemed to really have a handle on it. Yeah.
Okay, two of them weren't. Two of them quite. No.
No, the other one was you. No, you were very good at critiquing before. You're all very complimentary about the floor. It made me very happy.
Yeah.
Thank you.
You had a brush with a celebrity today.
I had a brush with a Z-list local celebrity.
Was it Basil Brush?
Wasn't Basil Brush. It's a chap named Julian Clegg, who has very big ears and a bald head and presents the early morning show on Radio Solent.
I've never, ever heard of him.
Or I think if you saw him, you'd probably recognise him from the show that used to go out before Most Haunted Live.
I don't know.
No, my wife's very fond of Most Haunted Live.
Oh.
I like it less now the hilarious Charlotte and Derek Acora is no longer on it.
Did he die?
No, he just doesn't do it anymore. It's funny. I like people pretending to talk to dead people. It's funny. Anyway, yeah, I was on the bus.
What if you woke up in the middle of the night and I was on the end of your bed and you didn't know I had a key or anything and I was on the end of your bed just looking into one corner of the room pretending to talk to a dead person? Would you like that? Would that amuse you?
Well, I think there's the potential that I'd probably beat the shit out of you if I woke up suddenly.
But then what if you went to put your hands on me and fell straight through?
Well,
that's sad, Nick.
Yeah.
That's unlikely to happen, though, isn't it?
No, you never know, do you? We could go at any second.
I don't, but I can make a pretty good stab at
Me.
You. With this knife. Shiv. Anyway, so I was on the bus.
Uh-huh.
On my way to a meeting for work. I was in Winchester. And people were stood around acting shiftily. And for some reason, this chap had a camera crew with him and was interviewing a man in a white shirt and a Dayglow workman jacket.
Mm-hmm.
I couldn't tell what they were talking about because I refused to take my iPod out of my ears.
Yeah, that's fair.
But he was in my way when I wanted to get off the bus. I pressed the bell and he was in my way. And this old lady in front of me fawned over him a little bit because Radio Solent is beloved by old ladies.
By the elderly. Mm.
Yeah. And she was fawning over him a little bit and he's like... Ugh. And I was just... You know when people get out of your way when you get off the bus, you acknowledge them. But I think this recognition from this old lady had rather got to him. And
did he break down?
And no, as I was walking past him, I sort of nodded to, and he smiled at me. And he went to shake my hand. And I kind of looked at his hand a little bit dismissively, I think. Refused to shake his hand. And then, I guess in a face-saving exercise on his part, he rubbed my belly.
Oh, my gosh.
I love that.
And then I got off the bus feeling a little bit nonplussed, really.
I don't know. A bit violated.
Well, a little bit. I mean,
why
would I shake someone's hand on the bus to start with, regardless of their status in the local community? And what gave him the right to rub my belly? I'm not a fucking lucky Buddha.
Listen, these guys were teasing me of this story on the way in, and I was annoyed with them because they wouldn't tell me anything about it. But I'm actually quite glad that they saved that. That was good.
Thank you, James.
It's one of the strange... Thing is, I was quite apprehensive about the meeting I was going to. I thought it had the potential to be quite a fractious affair. Didn't help my anxiety before that. So I had to have two cigarettes before going in.
Oh, I had a fractious affair once.
Mm. How did that work out for you?
Just angrily.
So that was the low light or highlight of my week, depending on how you look at it.
It is a bit of a mixed blessing, isn't it?
Yeah.
That's when you walked away, did you imagine the Hulk music playing in the
back of your head? No, I imagined Ralph Garman and Kevin Smith talking to each other about things that had happened in Hollywood.
With belly rubbings?
No, because I've got a very poor imagination and that was just happening to
the
podcast I was listening to.
Did you, after that happened, was your first instinct to turn to Kevin and say, did you see what just... And then you realised he wasn't actually there?
No, not at all. I chuckled myself. I mentioned it on Twitter. I recommend you do an image search of this chap because he is quite disarming looking. I've got a picture here to show Nick.
Oh my goodness! I don't think I think I'd remember him if I'd seen him.
He's quite recognisable once you know what he looks like. So look up Julian Clegg on a Google image search, and that's the man, the grinning, big-eared bastard that rubbed my belly without me giving him permission to do so.
That's like assault. Show me on the Winnie the Pooh where he touched.
Did he look you in the eye while he was doing it?
He did look me in the eye. He didn't know what to do because I'd kind of just refused to shake his head.
He probably didn't understand. It's probably quite confusing for people. And to be fair, you kind of do have a physical personality that makes me want to. Makes people want to touch
you. I suggested on Twitter later on that it is possible. The chance is remote, but it is possible. But actually, the reason he got the way he did is because he's a fan of the Momcast and just got a bit giddy at seeing me and got a bit overwhelmed. That's not that likely, but you never know. So if it is the case, though, hello, Julian, never touch my belly again or I will break your fingers.
Being filmed? Were they filming you while this was going on?
I don't think they were filming while it was going on. I don't think it's been recorded.
On self today.
Julian Clegg rubbing the belly of a slightly rude fat man who refused to shake his hand.
I'm fairly confident we're on fairly safe ground with this because he did assault you.
Yeah.
And
someone had some very strong smelling pate on the train on the way back, which really offended me.
Were either of these, was it the party train?
Yeah, it's the party train. We were off our tits.
Did you get onto the party bus afterwards? Or was it the short bus?
Oh, it's the Venga bus.
The Venga bus? Excellent.
You two should probably talk about
comics.
Um, Before I do, just should mention, there's going to be lots of stuff in the show today. I don't know if we already have mentioned it. I don't think we have. I got a bit disoriented by your story, to be honest.
Good.
But there are lots of contributions today. Lots to go.
Thank you, lovely listeners.
Yeah, you're awesome.
Just in case I forget later.
And those of you who've contributed but don't actually listen, which seems peculiar, but it might happen. Thank you as well. You're lovely too, but you won't be able to hear this because you won't be listening.
Are you trying to leave pauses in Jane keeps saying something straight after the point where you're trying to leave a pause?
That does
an
not,
edit point.
That does not seem like something that would happen on a podcast.
Because it really makes me laugh. Because it looks like you're trying to leave a pause for an edit point. Jane keeps jumping into
because
that
maybe
pause.
You should
it's hilarious.
Maybe you should tell me at the beginning that where you want the pause.
No, I never want that to happen. Because it's after 75 episodes of this, I'm fed up with it. Your Nick and your company, great. We're on words now. The only joy I get out of doing this is you not letting Nick leave a pause when he wants to leave an edit gap. Not really. I love doing this podcast. I'm joking. Sorry, Jane. You look really crestfallen and I feel so guilty.
So what comics did you read this week, Jane?
This week I bought New York 5, issue 2, by Brian Wood and Ryan Kelly.
Mm-hmm.
I bought the first issue when it came out, but I hadn't had a chance to read it, so I watched them. I watched them.
Turned the pages
for
you.
I was like,
you.
Why aren't they moving?
The physical comedy there was brilliant. I'm sorry, listener. But she actually held them and acted out what happened,
because,
and it was brilliant.
Yeah, thank you. So I read them back to back, which was really nice. I quite like it. It's irritating when you have a backlog of comics, but then it's quite nice to read them back to back.
Oh, yeah,
you've
definitely.
Just got a continuous story. I didn't read the New York 4. It is on my Amazon wish list, so I'm hoping I'll be purchasing that now payday has come.
The point of the Amazon wish list is someone else buys them for.
But my Amazon wish list is full of things for other people.
Oh, that's weird.
That's why it's not public, because I realise I just put things for other people in. So you'll end up buying me The History of Canada, Red Dead Redemption for the Xbox, which I don't have, and some other stuff.
Oh,
I can't remember what else on it.
Is it saucy stuff?
No, just stuff that isn't for me.
Edible chocolate body batter.
Yeah,
I
wouldn't
buy that
on Amazon.
Your body butter.
Okay. Lovely.
But anyway, so on your wish list, but it's actually for you.
Yes, it's for me. So it's my wish list to buy for me. Maybe I should make another wish list for things I want people to buy me.
Yeah.
Okay.
That's how you're supposed to use it, Jane.
Good. Now I know. I've been educated. Thanks, Nick. It's following four girls after their first semester in college, which was covered in New York 4. They have, as Riley, who was quite a quiet girl, and she came to college and she decided she was going to come out of her shell a bit more and sort of met the three other girls who she's sort of fast become friends with. They are, if you'd like to know, there's Riley Wilder, who's the main character in this, Bren Severin, Marissa Vascusa,
okay, yeah.
This is going great. Go on, crack on.
I should have thought about this, shouldn't I?
Yeah, you maybe should
have
learned
the names. I'm so delirious
first.
At the moment.
That whole tummy thing. I think I'm going to... There's going to be a point after you guys have gone. It'll be the middle of the night and I will wake up. It'll be like Mr. Burns after he kicked the person and he's remembering it later.
And he makes
I'll wake up in the middle of the night and I'll just think... person rubbed James's boot.
And
sorry, go on.
Lona Lowe as well. So she's met these friends. They all pulled together and they all live in an apartment together. But Riley got a job in a psychiatrist's sort of evaluation program.
It's like
sort of psychiatric.
It's like a research thing.
And the other three girls do as well, and it pays quite well. So they're cut to scenes in this, where you see scenes of them talking to a camera and being questioned by the professor. They're in their second semester. It seems like a lot sort of happened over the summer. There's sort of story of Riley and meeting up with her estranged sister and her sister's boyfriend taking interest in Riley.
Piece of work in the first book.
So a lot's happened to him. But in issue two, we are sort of focusing a bit more on Marissa, who's having sort of lots of family problems, and the other girls are speculating whether or not she's going to college, and she's got a lot to deal with at the moment. Riley is still trying to get in contact with her sister again. She's too scared. Her sister's joined as now the front of a quite popular band that's going around the circuit in New York. She goes to the gigs, but she's not saying anything to her, but she's really proud. But it's quite hard. She seems to be really, really going back into her shell, it seems like, and not being open up to her sister. You've got Lona, who's... I think that was her name. Yeah, Lona, who is become obsessed with her college professor because he's given her some B grades instead of A. So she's absolutely obsessed by this.
It's weird. She doesn't fancy him or anything.
No, she's out to get him. She's out to find something incriminating.
Yeah,
really because strange. Just because he's she's always been a straight A student, but it sort of talks about how she's always relied on other people to prompt her to do the work. She's more than capable to do the work and do it amazingly, but she needs these prompts, and he didn't give her these prompts, so her grade slipped, and it's completely rocked her world, and now she's out to get him. And Ren, who seems to fall in love quite easily, and has a flighting fancy with different guys, it seems, and gets over them really quickly, and then falls in love with another one really quickly. So I'm still getting to know the characters a bit, but it says New York 5. In the big thing in issue 2 is the fifth girl is introduced.
She turns up at the end of the first one, doesn't she?
Yeah, I think she's up at the first one, but she's more sort of introduced in the second issue. So it's interesting to see, because of the character and the fact that she's not of wealth, and it seems that she's not actually at college. It's going to be interesting to see what's going to happen if she ends up living with them, and if she does end up living with them, who's going to be moving out. It's going to be interesting to see what happens to characters. Again, I haven't read New York 4. I didn't find it hard jumping into this. There's a good, really good an issue on. There's a really good sort of backstory about what happened. So obviously I've regurgitated that to you guys, but I really would like to read it and see what's happened in that one. I love Brian Wood's writing again. Excellent. Doesn't need to say too much. Knows when he doesn't need to say too much, and knows when he needs to say a bit more. Each panel, each page has. Not even each page. When you're introduced to a new city.
When you're introduced to a new location.
A new location, he has a little sort of insight in that location, like, come for the food, stay for food, just things like that.
A little touristy, not touristy information, but little, to place you. It's very much New York's very. It's obviously quite specific parts of New York, isn't it, where all these young students are, but it's sort of it feels quite hip, the whole thing does, and then you're kind of getting these little insights into the areas and stuff.
It was quite a hip comic. Ryan Kelly, I don't think I've seen his work before. I'm trying to remember if I had or not.
Maybe not, although I don't know. He might have done a few issues of American Virgin, actually.
Yeah, I was thinking that as well.
Because that wasn't all Becky Poonen.
Because I was thinking the styles are very similar, but I couldn't remember. It wasn't my issues of American Virgin. I borrowed them from somebody else, so I have to go back and have a look. But the artwork's amazing. I'm really digging black and white art now. So
he's got much more crisp. They kind of draw similar stuff, but he's got where she's got very fluid.
Yeah.
And kinetic style. His is much more sort of draws a room, it's very detailed and stuff like that, isn't it? But I really like him. Yeah, I really like his art as well. He's very good.
It's I don't want this to be a negative thing, but it does remind me of a TV programme, but not necessarily Friends, but that sort of thing where you're finding out what they're all doing, and it's all different. It's all a bit dramatic and everything. You know, there's nothing unnatural, supernatural, fanciful about it. It's all quite real, but young and quite American. So,
well, I mean, it's interesting because that's coming out from Vertigo, but the original book came out from Minx, which was aimed at sort of teenage girls. So it's kind of, it is, it's just about young women living in New York, isn't it, and finding their way, finding out stuff about themselves and other people.
Issue 2, it says issue 2, it's 2 of 4, so
all right, okay. 4.
Don't know if there'll be anything else. Yeah.
I mean, the first book worked quite well because it was finite and, you know, it was like a self-contained thing. I guess it makes sense that this was a miniseries. I didn't know that it was, though.
Yeah. Really enjoying this. Read it.
Okay. I've got to read it. I've actually got it. It's one of the comics I bought this week. We're not just pretending that James isn't here or anything. He's just not doing any standing order comics this week because he didn't go to the comic shop because he hates us. He's decided he renounces comics.
We all went separately as well. It really did spin the staff out there.
I didn't really like it. I didn't like going in there by myself. What's the matter, James?
Nothing.
He's going to be sick in his mouth.
Well, you didn't go.
I was going to pretend that you'd lock me outside of the room for a little bit for shits and giggles. But then I lacked the confidence to actually pull that little thing off. Yeah, little back, correct, pantomime is exactly what it would be. I lacked the confidence to pull it off. I thought, I'm not sure this is going to come across in the way that I've intended. So I decided not to do it in the end.
Well done, that was a good decision.
Yeah, I think so, yeah.
I bought New York 5 as well. Like I said, I haven't read it. I haven't had a chance to read many of my comics this week. I did read Who is Jake Ellis, which I believe Max might be talking to you about in a moment. Anyway, it continues to be great, is all I'll say about it.
Max continues to be great.
Yeah.
He does.
The first of the first few Age of X books seem to be coming through, so I've got a New Mutants, that's an Age of X crossover one, which I'm nervous of reading, to be honest. More Thor and Invincible Iron Man, both by Matt Fraction, which reminded me of something. And when you were talking about New York 5, the bit where they're talking to the psychiatrist, is the therapist, is kind of a bit like this. In the week, I think it was Matt Fraction suggested that in programmes like Modern Family and The Office, the US Office, when they're talking to the camera, the assumption you always make is that they're talking to a TV crew, but like, it's obviously not a TV show, otherwise it'd never air. He thinks those are actually their interviews with God at the end of their lives,
okay,
as they reflect on the stuff that's going on. So when they talk to the camera, they're talking to God, and God at the end of the series, at the end of the seventh series or whatever, will decide whether they go to heaven or hell.
Never thought I'd lose respect for Matt Fraction.
I think he was joking, James.
Oh, okay.
Bloody idiot. One thing that did surprise me, and this has been a bit of a roller coaster for me actually, The Amazing Spider-Man, or Spider-Man.
Yeah, Spider-Man.
The Amazing Spider-Man, number 655. I think I've been a bit confused because there was a .1 issue last week, which
God
was.
God knows what that was all about.
An inserted story in the middle of it. But this one, so I've been reading the last few of these, but the last couple have been a bit turbulent.
The last one had Bane on the cover, didn't it?
Hmm?
The last one had Bane on the cover.
Yeah, it did. It had Bane, Batman's villain, turned up.
Well, he broke Spider-Man's back, didn't he?
He did.
Famously, yeah.
But, yeah, so 6x5, big, nice, beautifully designed but sad-looking white cover, written by Dan Slott, with art by Marcos Martin. Whereas previous issues of that I picked up of this have been written by Humberto Ramos. Now, what seems to have happened at some point in one of the other Spider-Man books that I don't read is J. Jonah Jameson, previous editor and editor-in-chief of the Daily Bugle, publisher of the Daily Bugle, and now mayor of New York City, his wife died.
Oh, God.
I didn't know that happened. No. I think it got mentioned in passing in the .1 issue, actually. So this issue is basically the first several pages are really rigidly laid out storytelling, going through a bunch of the different characters as they wake up on the morning of the funeral, and you go about a third of the book passes without a single piece of dialogue, and it's incredibly depressing. The art, Marcos Martin's art, is really nice, but it's sort of like a kind of a mix. It's halfway between it reminds me a little bit of Tim Sale on the Long Halloween, and you know, the series of books he's done with Jeff Lowe. But also it's clearly I think there's a deliberate effort to sort of, especially when you see Peter Parker's face, there's a deliberate effort to evoke Steve Ditko as well, who, I mean, I don't mind comic art history isn't great. It doesn't really go back as far as Steve Ditko, but there's definitely, you know, his faces are very distinct and definitive, and like they're a very distinct style, and this is obviously trying to evoke that. It's quite tragic, and every time the way the emotions and the grief of all of the different characters are portrayed is very real and authentic feeling, but at the same time you kind of get this feeling every time Peter Parker turns up, there's a little you can tell that he feels responsible for her dying as well, which is very weird to say when you consider that there's no words in the first sort of third of the book. That theme is kind of picked out when it gets to the point where he's trying to go to sleep, and we're in an even more Ditko-esque dream sequence where he recalls the.
You're right, there, James? Really loudly.
Yeah, what? Really loud.
I'm so sorry.
You're an arsehole.
Tut tut.
No, that's really rude. It's just something I'm going to talk about. I wanted to check a specific bit. I didn't realise it was being that loud.
Do it quietly.
I'm so sorry.
My goodness. But yeah, he's recalling. He's obviously recalling letting the thief who killed Uncle Ben get by, but he basically the biggest part of the book is a dream sequence, a very surreal dream sequence where he remembers all of the people that he all of the people that have died around him, and it's bizarre. Pretty much every character who he's ever really had a relationship with seems to turn up in this, and that's when the Ditko-esque thing really starts to come through. I'm not sure if we're gearing up to get into this Fear Itself crossover that's going to be happening in the next few months in the Marvel books. It finishes on a siege sequence with a very peculiar looking terrorist, and it's just a really reflective, the whole book, I can't really spoil it because the whole book is just very reflective and tragic, really. James looks suitably chastened.
Aww.
Don't awe him, don't give him sympathy.
Oh, no, now they look like puppy dog eyes.
Now he looks like a peculiar car crash between Laurel and Hardy. it's one of those stories that's really entirely reflective. Not a lot really happens in it, because it's basically about this extended guilt dream he has. With any luck, James will be having a guilt dream tonight, and he'll think about all of the people he's wronged over the course of the podcast.
Only you. I can live with that.
And Jane.
No, not really.
I don't count.
Oh.
No, you count. Just I don't think I've wronged you, really.
It's good. The last few issues of Amazing Spider-Man have been great. Yeah. I'm enjoying it. But it is weird. It's been a bit of a roller coaster, and I'm wondering where it's going to settle. And I'm wondering if that means Humberto Ramos isn't on it anymore.
You're wondering a lot, aren't you?
I am. See, I'm saying that now, and I'm so tired that I'm wondering if it even was Humberto Ramos who was on it before. I'm sure it was.
And you're wondering if you're really here. And you're wondering if we're really here.
Oh, no, I know I'm here. Can't get away from that. So, yeah, those are the comics I bought this week.
Thanks, Nick.
Thank you.
Thanks. Thanks, James. I hate you.
Oh, God. Max Barnard, he's got a lovely voice. Max Barnard, comics are his choice.
So, it's been a rough few weeks. For me, I mean. Not for you, dear listener. You've had one as a momcast to keep you chew with their funny, funny jokes and draw for contributors talking about powerful jams or something. But I'm back and intent on not being a mopey bastard, so let's talk comics. Who is Jake Ellis 2 came out this week? It's only been a couple of weeks after the original solicited date, which for an Image comic of such high quality is more than satisfactory. Anyway, this issue is a rare beast, and it avoids the typical sophomore slump of most comics by having a second issue far stronger than the previous. Which, when you consider how much I adored the series' debut, well, it's saying something and then some. But what happens in this issue, I hear the voices ask, which is something I should sincerely consider getting checked out. Well, I'll tell you without spoiling anything in particular. We're given the apparent origin of John Moore and his ability to see the enigmatic Jake Ellis, and even outright told what Jake could be, though events over the issue lead me to believe that perhaps the truth of the matter is still something to be revealed. Outside of these valuable and insightful bites of character information, we get to see John in the present trying to stay safe and away from his pursuers, in action scenes reminiscent of the best spy thrillers, albeit rendered through the masterful hand of Tonsi Zonjic. And man, Tonsi Zonjic, he is on fire here. Everything is very crisp and, I want to say, cartoonishly realistic, but I feel that needs further exploration. Zonjic presents everything in a style that undeniably looks very far removed from photorealism, to the extent that it looks like pure pulp comics filtered through the more detailed art styles afforded by modern artists. But everything from the expressions on characters' faces to how locations are drawn, and most interestingly, at least to me, in the movements and limitations of the human body, which is rendered here in such a magnificent fashion that it's pure joy to behold. Oh, and of course, Tonsi's trademark... Is it trademark yet? Ability to draw incredibly attractive people continues. In this issue, we have a tired, drawn and haggard John Moore, bags under his eyes and looking substantially grizzled, and damn me to hell if he still doesn't look so dashing that all the jaws must surely drop to the floor. It's a unique talent that can pull a comic from merely brilliant to full-on dazzlingly beautiful, and I haven't even mentioned the colouring we've got going on in this issue. But sadly, I'm running out of time, so just be assured that it's phenomenal and we can move on to the writing side of things from Nathan Edmondson. I mean, you can probably assume from my adoration of the art that Edmondson has cracked out a great script, directing the actual content fantastically, and you'd probably be right. I can't help but desperately want to see the original scripts for these issues, this one in particular, to see just how well he's controlled every nuance, and indeed to how much of what I've read into the work is intentional on his part. Heck, even if they're not, it's testament to the man's chops that he's managed to throw together what is easily one of the best comics I've ever read. And his dialogue. Oh, his dialogue. It's natural. It flows. It uses other languages without it seeming forced, and he avoids the obvious traps of such things by avoiding such cliches as Clermontian accents throughout. It's engaging, it's effective, and every speech bubble, a slight exaggeration perhaps, but shut up, is worthwhile and purposeful without being overlong. Edmondson is one of those talents I can see truly coming up in the comics world following this series, and anything less would be a criminal waste of a true talent. So it's obvious to say that I enjoyed this comic. If you haven't been buying this, well, it's probably because the first issue sold out, but if that's not the reason, then you're a Burke and should get into this now. You honestly won't find a better comic on the shelves right now. So, yeah. And I'm off, because I've gone on too long. But don't worry, I should stick around for now on, so keep an ear out for next week when I'll talk about a certain film starring Adam West and Burt Ward. Toodles.
So, is there any comic news this week?
I think there's only really one piece.
Yeah,
and it's something that the Dwayne McDuffie passed away this week.
He did.
It was reported on Tuesday. Yeah. Details were quite sketchy, which I, you know, actually think that there's nothing. That's probably how it should be when someone you don't know dies.
Yeah.
I don't really know how much of an impact he's really had on you guys, because you really started reading comics. James only really started reading comics recently, and
I managed to miss out the majority of the 90s.
Yeah, which is really when he was... it's not when he did all of his work, but it's when he was most... most prominent, most influential. And to be honest, I didn't... it's a name that I knew from comics, reading comics through the 80s and 90s, but I didn't really know very much about him. But the outpouring of sort of sadness from people, and some of the stories that have been coming out of people who actually knew him, have been quite sort of sad.
He was well loved and will be missed.
There's been really nice tributes paid to him, certainly in my Twitter feed, which is unsurprisingly comic heavy.
He's the subject of race, well, not race, that sounds awful, but the subject of race keeps coming up because he was a very influential black editor and writer, I think. I believe he was an editor as well.
Yeah.
But I don't know if it came from letters of note or where it came from, but basically there's a letter that apparently he sent to Marvel when he was working for Marvel in the late 80s. I think he was working for Marvel at the time. In the late 80s, and apparently 25% of all of the African-American superheroes appearing in the Marvel Universe at that time possessed skateboard-based superpowers.
Oh.
And he wrote a letter to Marvel Editorial, basically satirising and kind of calling them out on it. You should have a look for it. Do a Google search for it. You should be able to find it under the heading Teenage Negro Ninja Thrashers. It's quite funny. I won't read it out, but it's sort of, even if like us, you're a bit vague on Dwayne McDuffie's actual work, it kind of gives a bit of an insight into why people are so like shocked and saddened by him dying.
Mm-hmm.
And that's that. I don't know. We have a long-standing tradition of not really doing a very good job of.
I think we've done all we need to do.
Yeah, yeah.
None of us are massively familiar with him. I think I very much enjoyed David Wynne did a nice tribute sketch.
Oh, which was lovely. Yeah, yeah. And if you have you can probably find that on David Wynne's. It's probably on his Twit pics or something.
Probably, yeah. I think so.
We posted it on Tumblr, but. So, was anything else reported in on Bleeding Cool or CBR that you want to discuss, James?
No.
you're just determined not to really take part this week, aren't you?
Absolutely, I'm trying really hard.
Well, you have to now, James.
I'm trying to be quiet.
Because it's your spotlight.
Trying to be a good boy.
You have to talk now.
Oh, look, there's the doggy from
We Three.
I'm sure there has been lots of stuff going on. Should we just have a look on CBR?
Yeah, let's have a look on CBR. So, let's face it, that's all I do during the week is check out CBR. So where else should you get your comic book news from, though? Apart from CBR and Bleeding Cool and a few other. Weekly Crisis, I pick up opinion from, obviously, the excellent Weekly Crisis.
One thing that I touched on there very, very briefly.
Oh, there's a new Jambo out, starts today.
Oh, yes.
That's Read worth it. Mentioning.
Yes. And we'll be hearing from George in a minute, probably.
Cool.
He had a bit of a nightmare with his technology this week. One thing I did mention, actually, is... Oh, I read about this today. Mm. You might not have picked this up yet. Rob Williams is going to be taking over on Dark Wolverine. It kind of only went around the last week. And reading, I haven't really been following Dark Wolverine, except where he's appeared in... was it Dark Avengers? What was the Avengers book?
You mean Dakin? Dakin was
Yeah, Dakin. That's Dark Wolverine. That's what Dark Wolverine is. That's who Dark Wolverine is, James.
What, Dakin?
Yeah.
All right, yeah.
Who has apparently taken over Madripoor.
I can't remember what happened to him in Dark Avengers. I thought he got his...
He got suitably chastened for being an Frumpkin Punisher. Yeah, and then Wolverine, I think, rescued
him. Oh, yeah, of course.
And then he went and took over Madripoor.
All right,
I think. But Rob Williams is going to.
Is that in the Middle East?
I think it's near Canada.
Has he recently been deposed?
No.
Oh.
But basically, it looks like Rob Williams is going to be. It looks like the book's exploring It's sort of like the birth or the rise of a supervillain, essentially, which isn't something you see very often in comics from that supervillain's point of view. Well, so it should be interesting. Yeah.
I don't care for him as a character.
Do you not?
No.
Even though you like Rob Williams.
Like Rob Williams, I don't care for Dakin.
Oh, well, never mind then. I thought you might be interested.
I'm interested, but I just don't care for the character. Sorry.
No, that's
fine. I don't like all characters in all comics.
I can't even look at you now.
Oh, why don't you look at me during the podcast?
Also, we kind of fidgeted around a little bit with the Momcast Tumblr page.
Yeah.
So there is now stuff, comic-y stuff being... Because, essentially, I've had a bit of a problem with it because my own personal Tumblr does have comic-y stuff on it. But it also has other stuff that some people don't want to look at necessarily quite so much. So, at the moment, what the Momcast Tumblr is doing is basically cycling through some of the comic stuff I've found over time.
It's basically a safe-for-work version of your Tumblr.
Yeah, that's essentially what it is. So you can follow that. It's Momcast. I think it's momcast.tumblr.com, but it's relatively easy to find. But so you can follow that for nice comic pictures and stuff.
If we're doing housekeeping, some people very kindly commented that they noticed that the Mom Comics site is no longer available. That's because we're doing some jiggery pokery, and it'll be back again. One day.
We're doing magic.
Specifically jiggery and pokery.
Specifically jiggery and pokery.
We're not shenaniganing.
Mm. But we know it's disappeared.
There's no
malarking
happening. But thank you for pointing that out.
It'll come back one day.
But so the momcast.tumblr.com thing, but you can submit stuff to that. So if you find nice comic-y stuff online, just if it's fan art or whatever, you can submit it to that. Or tell us about it on Twitter and we'll go have a look. Yeah. And stuff.
Cool.
Stuff. I like the way that sounds. Stuff.
George Beedham!
Wah! Wah!
Scouse Drawther!
Wah! Wah!
Hello, it's George Beedham again, Drawther of the Mighty Jambo. That's at notregret.com/Jambo. And it's just starting a new issue today, so you should all go and read it and enjoy that. I'm going to talk about DC Presents Young Justice number 1, which is actually a reprint of a JLA annual called World Without Grown-Ups, which was early 90s, I guess. It's written by Todd DeZago, with Humberto Ramos and Mike McCone sort of taking turns on the art. It's kind of how Impulse, Superboy and Robin all come together to form the team Young Justice, which was one of my favourite comics in the 90s. Yeah, so it starts out and we've got Robin, Superboy and Impulse all basically being quite unhappy that their supervisors are so overbearing and they're never allowed to have any fun, blah blah blah. General teen angst stuff. And then we get introduced to the villain of the piece, who is known as Bedlam, although he's not named till right at the end of the book. He's some kid whose dad's brought a magical artifact home, and then he gets the powers of a god, which is a really catch-all term, and I hate using it, but there we are. And he decides to make a world without grown-ups, hence the title of the story. We then cut to the grown-ups waking up to, weirdly, a world without children. Everyone's very upset and puzzled, but the Justice League is on the case, obviously. So then we cut back to Kid World, where all the... I'm going to start calling them Young Justice because I can't be bothered listing the names all the time. Young Justice come across Billy Batson. Robin manages to sort of guilt-trip him into saying his magic word and transforming into Captain Marvel, despite the fact that he's terrified that if he does, he will vanish like all the grown-ups have. Saying his magic word transports him to a grown-up world where he starts to fill in the JLA and they start to sort of investigate properly. And they find Captain Marvel is the centerpiece to this spell. All his magic is powering the spell that's separating the two worlds. Back on Kid World, the final confrontation between Young Justice and Bedlam is one of Impulse's finest moments, and now nobody can write Bart Allen properly because Kid Flash read an entire library and he's kind of really intelligent and no one knows how to write that in still like quite a fun way. So they fight. I don't want to spoil it because you can still buy the issue even though it's 20 years old. The interesting thing about this is not only did it give rise to one of my favourite comic book series ever, which is Young Justice, but it also has a really interesting shift between Kid World, which is drawn by Humberto Ramos, who's currently doing the rounds at Amazing Spider-Man, and Mike McCone, I think that's how you say his name, who is doing Avengers Academy. But yeah, all the JLA stuff is drawn by him, so all the grown-up stuff in the sort of real world, if you want, is drawn by him, and it gives the shift between the two worlds a really interesting thing that... because McCone's artwork is quite sort of traditional superhero-based stuff, whereas Ramos, he has that sort of super deformed style that where everything's about the action and the flow of the page. So everything in Kid World is sort of like, is really sort of bright and attention grabbing and sort of how children see the world. Like everything's really bright and woo, look at me. So yeah, it sums up the sort of differences between adults and kids really, really well. And it sort of shows that, Young Justice are a team worth having because the JLA couldn't have solved this as Young Justice do all the hard work. But yeah, it's a lovely book. It's well worth a read. Sadly, the ongoing series by Peter David and Todd Nowick isn't collected particularly well. I've moaned about that before. I've only got one trade of that and a few original issues kicking about. But yeah, if you can track down any of that, it's totally worth having. I've rumbled on for ages now, so I'm going to stop. Buy this comic, it's awesome. And if you've got some spare cash, why not buy one of mine? Because they're pretty good too. I'll see you later. Bye.
Do you want to do your spotlight, James?
Okay. I'm not going to do Tintin this week.
No, why not? We like Tintin.
Yeah.
I wanted a break. Because I read other books.
I don't think I'm going to listen then.
Okay. It's a Vertigo original graphic novel. Drawn in a clear line style, essentially.
Ooh.
By a female drawer called Sarah Glidden. You've probably heard of this. It's in the back of pretty much all of the Vertigo, or was in the back of all the Vertigo books a few months ago.
Oh, yeah, it was, wasn't it?
It's How to Understand Israel in 60 Days or Less. And it's an autobiographical book recounting Sarah's trip to Israel with a friend of hers called... I think it's Melissa, isn't it?
Well, did you not find that out while you were looking through it while I was doing my Spider-Man review?
With her friend Melissa. And they go on a... No, I didn't. I was actually... What I was looking for is... I really enjoy... I'll probably say up front, I really loved this book. It was a really enjoyable experience reading it. There was a certain part of it that I actually found myself crying when I was reading it. And I really wanted to remember what part of that book that was. Because I hadn't realised up until then quite how much I'd connected with this book. And I kind of wanted to be able to mention it. It's probably not worthwhile now.
No, so it's fine. I'm just thinking that we are fast turning into the weepiest podcast, the weepiest comic podcast there is.
Certainly the weepiest comic book podcast in Southampton.
Yeah, I think Weeping Tom's Comics and Cards.
And anyone who
podcast.
Hasn't weeped.
Yeah.
Hmm?
And anyone who hasn't.
That's because you've had your tear ducts removed, Jane.
Yeah.
When have I weeped?
You
get. I got a bit sad earlier on.
Yeah.
Yeah, and when you were cuddling Winnie the Pooh as well.
Oh no, I was just cuddling him. It was an entirely sexual thing.
Ah.
But I might have been weeping.
I've had I was a temp for Pictures for Sad Children, and had my tear ducts soldered.
Oh.
So I couldn't cry.
That is quite sad. Oh, I think James wants to get on with his spotlight.
I was just merely letting James know he was right.
Do you want to get on with it? This isn't a time
Please
to be leaving gaps.
That
was dead air.
Sorry.
We call that dead air in radio.
So, essentially in this book, Sarah and her friend Melissa, and in real life as well, because that's what she's recounting, took advantage of a Birthright Israel trip, which is a fund, I think, in Israel, where people donate, and young Jews from around the world can take advantage of that and take a Birthright tour of Israel. She does so as a skeptic. She has a Muslim boyfriend who's of Pakistani origin, I believe, in this. And they're both very pro-Palestinian. And she makes that clear from the outset. And at the beginning of the book, she very much seems to want this journey to Israel just to reinforce her attitude towards the Israelis.
Mm-hmm.
What she finds as the story unfolds is, and as you do as a reader, that obviously the situation there is a lot more complicated than I think a lot of us would like to believe. And actually, this book opened my eyes in terms of the Israeli-Palestinian situation as well, actually. I was kind of cemented into an attitude of, well, really the Israelis need to be stop being so aggressive and give the Palestinians all the land they want, which I still believe the Palestinians deserve their homeland. But it gave me, I think, a deeper insight into the situation. Certainly gave me a deeper insight into how the state of Israel came to be. I kind of understood that it was in 1948 when the British gave up their mandate of Palestine is essentially when the state of Israel we understand now came into being. But I didn't understand about the early Eastern European settlers in the late part of the 19th century who essentially started the first kibbutz. Mm-hmm. And I didn't understand that essentially Israel evolved from that. I really wasn't aware of that at all.
Mm-hmm.
So that was fascinating to read about. And it's also what's fascinating is Sarah's voyage of discovery as we go through this book. And it's almost obviously like the scales fall from her eyes in terms of how she feels about Israel, how she feels about her religion, how she feels about where she came from, and how she feels to be Jewish. It's a really stunningly affecting book. Sorry, go on, Jo.
I was going to say, my mum went on a kibbutz. She was there longer than she was supposed to. It was after she left school. I think this must have been late 60s, early 70s, and she left school. She was there longer. And you stay with a sort of family, and you have a house mum and dad and stuff. And there's quite a few people from there. She said there were lots of ditzy Americans who were just sunbathing all day long. There was lots of, you know, different characters she met there. But she was telling me a story about one of the guys who worked there, who was there. They all had chores. They all had to do their chores. So it might have been tending to sort of chickens and things, or it might be the housework or cooking. And, you know, she absolutely adored her house mum, who she was staying with, and they really took care of her. But there's one guy there she became friends with, and he would always clean the toilets, which was obviously on sort of the campsite was probably not the nicest thing to do. And one day my mum was sort of chatting to him and said, oh, why do you always do it? You know, they usually rotate the chores, but he was Jewish, and he was caught in Auschwitz when he was during the war, during the Second World War. And he just said to my mum, because he's done worse things, he's had to do worse things, that it was not a really horrible job. So I'm trying to make us the weepiest podcast there is. It's just saying that my mum, you know, I didn't have a very great understanding of Israel and everything that's going on there, and I don't know, like, obviously the Second War's something different, but there's a lot of conflict while she was there as well, which is why she had to stay longer, because there's gunfire going on all around her. It's, you know, it was not, there were people going there that seemed to think it was either not as bad as it was, or just were quite ignorant to what was actually going on out there. But it was a dangerous place to be. You had to be, you know, escorted most places. And it was hard work being on the kibbutz. It was a lot of hard work, but it was a really valuable experience to my mum. So
it's interesting that you said that Sarah Glidden, that one of the things that happened in that was she was expecting to feel one way and ended up feeling another way. And it's quite interesting for a creator to sort of not completely change her mind, but sort of
I think what comes across in the book is more, she's more insightful. I don't think her core values particularly change, but certainly her experience was, and what she conveys in the book is, it gives you an insight as to the shades of grey, rather than whereas I think a lot of people who would consider themselves progressive have a very entrenched attitude towards the rights and wrongs of the Palestinian and Israeli situation. Sorry, Neil.
Well, of everything, really. Interesting thing is that the last couple of weeks on Twitter and Tumblr, well, actually, to be honest, just most of the time you spend on the internet and around other human beings, but specifically the last couple of weeks, have really highlighted the ability, the propensity of people in the West, who are quite comfortable, generally quite comfortably off in the West, to make pronouncements and have fully formed opinions, formed and very loud and outspoken opinions about places that they had never been, and even if they had been, they could never really understand, because the world is complicated. And there's nothing wrong with discussing stuff. One of our friends of the podcast, David, was actually talking about it on Twitter a lot in the week, and I kind of agree with him on this, which is interesting because we've had lots of arguments online, lots of debates online, that talking things through and trying to understand them while they're happening in other parts of the world is perfectly viable and perfectly useful, and it can even get quite heated, but having definitive opinions on places that you haven't been is just, it ends up making you look not foolish necessarily, but it's kind of a fool's errand, really, because you can't ever know what it's like for people on the ground. Something ends up getting a little bit philosophical, doesn't it? But the fact is that things aren't black and white. Nobody's really good, nobody's really evil. For the most part, when bad things happen, they're the results of other bad things having happened in the past and stuff like that. So.
And it also, sorry.
No, that's right.
I was just going to say, it also reinforces how you have to experience, you have to really, some things you just have to experience to actually understand it. I know that sounds really obvious, but I think a lot of people, media and everything is so freely available. You've got Twitter, you can reach pretty much anyone anywhere in the world, and you can sort of collaborate all these opinions, but they're going to be biased, and you know,
they're only ever opinions.
That's it, they're only ever opinions, but people will form their opinion on these opinions, and they don't actually, they don't fully understand. And I think when it's fair enough to have your opinion, but it seems to be more of a thing where it becomes the be-all and end-all. People are like, right, this is my opinion, I will shove this down your throat, and this is what you have to believe.
Yeah.
When I think people are getting a bit more lazy and not experiencing things. Okay, fair enough. Some things you can't experience, but I think people are becoming more lax. They'll read a couple of things because it's easier and take it at face value and then form their opinion rather than actually experiencing it for themselves or research. That's one thing. People, you can read art news articles, that's fair enough, but people don't seem to do proper research anymore. They don't seem to properly explore a subject and get the pros and cons and be able to form their own opinion from that. They just seem to read a few bits, kind of say the same thing, I kind of agree with that, and then tell everyone or shout at everyone that they agree with it.
Yeah, I mean, that's... I agree, and I don't even think you don't even necessarily have to experience stuff or even get to the end of all of the reading and base an opinion on that. Just being aware that some things aren't knowable,
or
you aren't going to get there. There's this thing we have, there's this idea we have in England, and I think it happens quite a lot in America as well, that basically we can have a fully formed opinion on everything. That's insane.
Yeah.
Most people don't even really know what they're doing on a day-to-day basis or how they feel about, like, their next-door neighbours. So to sort of... the interesting thing in the last week has been that in Egypt, the police... The online opinion of the police in Egypt was flipping and flopping backwards and forwards. And then the Libya situation very quickly... that seemed to come out of nowhere, as far as most people were concerned. We were very quickly hearing stories about police being killed because they weren't opening fire on people.
Yeah.
When 2 or 3 months ago in this country, our police were evil and we blah, blah, blah. And the fact is that it's never as simple as that. It just never is. So the fact that this gives some insight into it, and it's from someone who's actually been out there.
Yeah.
And that your absolute might not be the absolute as well. Yeah.
You've been kind of... I'm not sure how you're going to respond to this, because your facial expressions have been brilliant over the last minute and a half.
It's because I'm trying to remember my train of thought in terms of talking about the book.
Mm.
Because, yes, it does, given the events... It feels topical because of the events in the Middle East over the last week. Although it was set in 2007, which I think was a period of tense peace between between the two sides. There's some lovely moments as she starts to question her attitudes, and certainly she's very suspicious of the tour she's on. So obviously it's birthright Israel. It's very much her suspicions are that the tour is going to be very heavily skewed towards selling the idea of the Zionist idea, essentially. There's a couple at the beginning of the book, a couple of quite interesting courtroom scenes. They're obviously cut away from the real action, and this is her internal dialogue, where she's questioning whether what she's being told is the truth or not, which works very interestingly. She doesn't actually carry that theme the whole way through, but then I don't actually think you need to, because the dialogue, her internal dialogue, plays out more naturally towards the end of the book, so she doesn't need to cut away to these... courtroom scenes. It's very interesting. The characters are incredibly sympathetic the whole way through. You don't really meet anyone on either side that you dislike. I think one of my favourite characters in the book was Gil, who was the tour guide, who she begins very suspiciously, or feels very suspicious towards at the beginning, but it seems to be very self-effacing in terms of the the situation. I think as an Israeli understands the plight of the Palestinians, has sympathy for it, but also still holds the Zionist ideal in his heart. And I think for most of the Israeli characters that she meets, it's this conflict. That most of them are quite liberal. It's quite a secular country. Mm. But they obviously feel the right to be there. And there seems to be this attitude that actually, well, the Palestinians probably need to... One of the characters at the end says, well, the Palestinians need to grow up a bit.
Mm.
Which is, obviously, I don't agree with my political attitude. But it's quite interesting to see these very sympathetic, very liberal characters have attitudes that jar and grate with my own, yet they're still otherwise what we probably deem as quite progressive people. It's very interesting. It's constant conflict between what's right, what's wrong, who has the right to be there and who doesn't. Mm. It's fascinating. I'm not doing it justice, frankly, to be honest.
You're doing all right.
But it's a really, really affecting book. It's just so beautifully written. I read a review, and illustrated as well, I read a review earlier today where someone criticised the art for not being quote-unquote realistic.
Oh, yeah. I think the art's charming. It's
really expressionistic, is what it is. It makes the story breathe through the art, which a good comic should do, surely.
It's interesting considering the crowning, sort of the best known sort of historical comic, I suppose, is Mouse, which is completely expressionistic.
Absolutely. Yeah, I think at times possibly reminded me of that. There's some beautiful scenes where she's comparing her scepticism. She's comparing what she knows for sure against what Gil's telling her, and she's very careful to show his show what he's telling her against what she knows to be fact. And as the book goes on, we find that actually the tour she's on with the guide she's on, it's very honest, very open. Mm-hmm. It's telling them for the most part the truth, albeit skewed. The book ultimately ends with her and her friend taking a visit to Jerusalem, where she worries she's going to get Jerusalem syndrome and go a bit. It's where tourists go a bit potty and think they're hearing the voice of God and run around in bed sheets, convinced that God sent them there for a reason. Apparently, she explains it a little bit in the book. The history of the place,
the way of history, isn't it?
Yeah, kind of gets to people and frazzles their brains a little bit sometimes, and sends people a little bit doolally. But you can feel her feeling the sense of spirituality, and it really the sense of spirituality really oozes out of the page at you. To be honest with you, it's a book I really connected with in a way that really surprised me. As I said, there was a part of the book when I was flicking through, being very rude earlier and interrupting your review of Spider-Man. I was flicking through trying to find the part.
I've forgotten about that.
I hadn't. I was flicking through the book. Good. I was flicking through the book trying to remember the part that I actually found myself crying at one point. And there is a point where, and I think it's the turning point of the book in terms of her attitude, that she finally cracks, finally realises that actually for a lot of Jews that lived there, there were no choices. They were escaping terrible persecution. The country maybe was started with very fine ideals, and actually the preconceived notions that she'd taken with her were wrong or were misjudged. And it came to the point where actually she was listening to a talk from a woman who's talking very sensibly about the young people and going into the young people that go into compulsory military service. It's a point just before they get to meet some soldiers, and she breaks down uncontrollably. And I actually found myself crying along with her, which really surprised me. I hadn't realised up until that point the book had got under my skin as much as it had. To be honest, it was quite a shock. It doesn't often happen, to be honest, with any sort of book. Regardless of whether it's comic book or not. I haven't got an awful lot more to say about this.
Sounds like good documentary style writing.
It sounds like something I want to buy my mum. I think I might have to buy that for her.
It's well worth it. It works on several levels. It works as a good old-fashioned travel log. And I personally, I'm someone I enjoy reading travel writing. Mm. Paul Theroux is one of my favourite writers of prose. Mm. I love his travel writing. It works on a political thesis, mm. possibly. Also works as a story about someone going on a spiritual journey as well. It really can't recommend this book highly enough. It's in hardback. It's from Vertigo. It's about 12, 13 quid, I think.
It's well worth it.
In the UK. And it's just one of the best individual graphic novels I think I've read for a while, actually. Mm. I really surprised me how much I enjoyed this.
Sorry, did you say what nationality Sarah was?
She's American.
She's American.
She's American.
Very briefly, because yes. I know you were talking about this earlier, but I know you didn't actually manage to get the chance to back up reading. But you've read Exit Wounds by Rita Mayodan. How does it relate, just generally speaking, does it relate to that?
It's weird, because Exit Wounds I read a while ago, and Exit Wounds is another really beautiful book, which is kind of, it's a love story, but it's set against the same geopolitical, set in Israel, basically. And kind of, I think what caused me to pick up How to Understand Israel in 60 Days or Less, it's because I loved Exit Wounds so much. I could see myself enjoying the book. I talked to myself about the sort of books I want.
You had a discussion.
It doesn't really compare. They are two very different books. Although Exit Wounds touches on similar themes, the politics are less, aren't quite so upfront.
Right.
Whereas How to Understand Israel in 60 Days or Less, the politics are always, it's about, really, on the surface, that's all, what it's really about is about the politics of the situation. Absolutely.
Going out
so it's always thing. It's always front and centre. It's always right there.
Okay, I might have to borrow that off you.
I'd really like you guys too, because it really blew my socks off, actually.
Thank you, James.
I'm really glad. I've been really looking forward to, while I was getting all grumpy and trying to remember what my train of thought was, is because I was desperate to do this book justice, because I'm looking forward to talking about it all day, because I loved it so much.
Thank you, James.
Thank you. I don't know.
You're a mess, man. I am a mess.
This book took me on an emotional roller coaster.
Hello, my name is Timothy Swan. You once forgot my name. Prepare to die, or be podcasted at. You know, since contributors have been getting theme songs, there's a real incentive to keep contributing. Good plan, everyone. Good, sneaky, cute as buttons plan. Anyhow, I'm here today to talk about webcomics, an upcoming short book, Giant Days. I want to start by giving a quick précis of my background as a comics fan, and the background of John Allison's Scary Go Round, so that we can get to where Giant Days sits. I consider myself a comics fan, but for the most part that comes from webcomics. This may be because I'm a sad mix of poor and stingy, or because I have a voracious appetite for stories that money can't really keep up with, but I have about 70 in my RSS, and more that I'm in the midst of reading, or have read and are now finished. My favourite nearly daily, daily in the way that Daily Show is daily, British webcomic, is that too specific? I didn't want to exclude particle fiction, was Scary Go Round, written by John Allison. It was a uniquely British, uniquely northern story about the strange town of Tackleford, where there are aliens, ghosts, monsters, and grammar schools. It ran for 7 years, and hit a problem that's affecting webcomics now in a way that print comics also seem to be struggling with, the great archives putting people off, the masses of backstory and previous adventures. Although Mr. Allison had not followed the same characters always, he wanted to start a new story with the younger people in that same universe. From this, Bad Machinery was born, and is a joyous experience. He's discussed how much he likes writing for younger characters, his current stars being just about in year 7, mostly the younger siblings of previous characters and their friends. However, he had always planned to bring back one of his popular former characters for a brief side adventure, something of a backup story on a large scale, and eventually opted for perky goth head girl Esther de Groot, whose transition to university marked the very end of Scary Go Round. This story is her Freshers' Week experiences. Now, I've just finished university, which might explain why this story appealed so much to me, but what is clear from page 1 is that he has captured the nervous tension, the strangeness, the class wars that characterised that early time at university. I don't know how long it was for him or if he even went, but he knows in his mind exactly how it feels, and it shows in the comic wonderfully.
The buildings look real and familiar. The people, the students' rooms, each have an incredible authenticity about them that is almost surprising coming from the madcap scary-go-round world. The story involves Esther being taken to an unnamed, likely red brick university, meeting her neighbours, Oblivious Daisy, an insomniac ball of intensity, Susan Tomley, getting to grips with the hall and the university bar, and getting very quickly abducted by a group of populace from private schools, who see, mistakenly, in Esther a kindred spirit. These populace are rich, vacuous and presumptive, and make the perfect villains in a small social drama like this. They conspire to snatch away Esther from the more normal pleb, as they say, friends that she is making. It all ends in a showdown that involves a lot of fighting styles and some unearthly powers, which made me think of a more charming, more English, less heteronormative Scott Pilgrim. It also sets it up nicely for many more adventures, which the readers have definitely requested. The art blends scenery realism with Mr. Allison's distinctive sort of angular approach to people, then invests each one of them with a unique character whilst maintaining them as part of the same world. This is a one-tone comic. Everything is in shades of blue, which gives it a minimalism that stands in contrast to the bright, bold look of Scary Go-Round and Bad Machinery, because this story is more laid-back, more normal, and yet still very comedic and dramatic. There is a fair amount of face-zooming for comic effect. The dialogue is possibly the most popular part of Mr. Allison's writing, and rightly so. One of the great keys to it is juxtaposition. They say when you're tired of Northampton, you're tired of life. Mixing hyperbolic phrases with British places and ideas, getting very excited about very small things. I saw one of them manage to puke in a perfect parabolic arc, and when I was head girl I got a special tie and gave a speech on Founders Day. I never really explored dominating the small and the weak. Was that wrong? A more beautiful lines with that same sense to it, which is always charming, and couples very well with what very natural dialogue, where every line resonates with the character. It feels totally human and totally believable. This fits with the situation. When Esther meets potential romantic interest Ed Gamel, their sequence about A-levels and the made-up ones they did is a hilarious response to a moment repeated a million times for people in the same situation as the characters. All of these elements give that real feel, and yet keep giving the laughs too. And I hope that people who haven't just had that mad university experience can appreciate it too, as one of the fine examples of quirky UK webcomics. A great introduction to those who haven't explored Mr. Allison's work, and a great addition to the tale for those who are already deep into it. So, Giant Days, the book, 25 pages long, is coming soon. It's worth buying. It's worth reading. And it might just hook you on Bad Machinery and Scary Go-Round and give you a decade's worth of comics to read.
So, we're almost done. It remains for us to thank the contributors who've been listening.
Thank you, you're all the lovely people.
You have to read what I wrote, though.
Thank yous to lovely people. Heart kiss. We love you.
What are you guys going to be doing over the next week? I genuinely have no clue because we don't have any plans to see you.
No, I really don't know. I'm going out.
Because I'm actually doing something. I'm going out with my boyfriend tomorrow night for a meal.
Oh.
Yes, it's we've been together for a defined amount of time where it's acceptable to celebrate it.
What, a year?
Yeah.
Oh.
And it's my friend Anna's birthday, John's partner, who occasionally does a pod, birthday on Saturday night, so we're going out for a meal and some drinks.
Oh, that'd be nice.
It will be.
Yeah.
Might be helping another friend move, but I'll talk to Nick later about that.
All right, okay.
And I'm going to have some food shopping delivered. Skateboard. It's for me. It's paid.
Do you remember when she used to make stuff up?
My food shopping was delivered by the stork that delivered Dumbo. So I've got a, that's claim to fame there.
That's
my coat. Don't worry.
That was quite good.
There was a weird knocking in the house earlier. I'm not sure what that was. I suspect it was something trying to get through from another dimension.
Probably.
What about you, James?
My mum and her partner are coming round on Saturday. So I think we're going to eat curry food. Because it's my birthday next
curry week. Food.
Yeah.
It's my curry food?
Curry food. We're going to have curry. And because it's my birthday next week, so that'd be nice.
Is it your birthday? How old are you?
I'll be 36 years old.
Really? You're that much younger than me?
Yeah.
It's a little more than a year. It's like a year and 2 or 3 months.
Well, yeah.
I'm probably going to be helping a friend move. We've got a friend who's going to be staying with us for a bit. So the podcast is going to be interesting because he's going to be sleeping right where you two are sitting.
Yeah, probably not at the same time as we're doing the
podcast. Oh, that'll make it interesting, though.
He's an early sleeper.
You'll be too distracted by him, though.
I will, James. Probably. So he's probably going to be quite sexy, the Bombcast, for a little while, yeah.
It's a bit problem, yeah. It's not problematic, it's good. It's going to be quite good fun. It's a friend I lived with before, so that's going to be quite exciting. My wife's coming back, that's going to be exciting, because I haven't seen her for a week, and she's lovely. And, you know, I can start, like, being like a normal human being and not a hobo again. Mm-hmm. That'd be good. And I think that's it, really. And then it will be the podcast again next week, and then it all starts again in an endless cycle that never ends.
Cue the Hulk music.
I'm feeling Hulk music now.
Yeah, I think we should go.
Goodbye, listener.
Thanks for listening.
Thank you.
Bye-bye.
Hey there, Ian Shalman. Here you might remember me from such comics as Hero 95 and Alpha Gods and many short stories in FTL and 11th Hour. I'm just calling in to you guys at the Monkeys on My Back podcast. Huge fan. Listen to you guys all the time with your funny little monkey antics and all that stuff. Yeah, I'm just letting you all know that I'm at the Cardiff International Comic Expo this weekend. Boom, come along, say hi. The tickets are all sold out, so if you're not already coming along, there's not much point. I think you can get tickets from 11 o'clock on the Saturday, possibly. I don't really know, I don't really care. But yeah, just come along and check out the new look Orangutan Comics website, because that's fantastic. Orangutancomics.co.uk. I would spell out Orangutan Comics for you, but nobody can spell it. I know this from my web stats. Anyway, yeah, have fun. I'm just saying hi, and keep up with all those great monkey antics, you guys. You're just, you know, one in a million and stuff. Bye.
The hiss is worse the louder it gets. The more I turn these up. Right, let's turn the main mix up. The trim. Oh, hold on. Okay, I've turned. That's getting close to accept. Yeah, it's getting better. Actually, strange. Fucking hell.
What did you do?
That is actually better in terms of the quality of the voice than you can't talk with those on. Sorry, my ears got sweaty. Now say something.
Hello.
What?
Now try and string a sentence together.
I'll try and string a sentence. It's weird because I can hear myself. I feel like that woman.
Listen, what woman?
That's as close as I can get to acceptable twiddling. Can I go home now? Skyrocket in flight.
Afternoon delight.
What is that?
Afternoon delight.
What is that?
The song or Afternoon Delight?
The song. Or Afternoon
The bit
Delight.
Where I went,
I assume Afternoon Delight is unbranded Angel Delight, isn't it?
Skyrocket in flight. Angel Delight. Angel Delight.
What is Afternoon Delight? Is it sex?
Sex.
Yeah.
In the afternoon.
Skyrocket in flight. Afternoon Angel Delight. Afternoon. Why aren't you harmonising with me, Jane?
Because she's really cold-hearted.
I'm not cold-hearted. Oh, we're recording. You have to be mean to me, don't you? And this week, James in the spotlight. James is doing the spotlight. Takes a break from Tintin to talk about Sarah Glidden's How to Understand Israel in 60 Days or Less. Mumcast, the comic book podcast that at this point of the introduction likes to insert a mildly satirical joke. Around the mic tonight are...
I love how you carried on with that. You know you're going to have to do it again.
Yeah. It's because my mouth and my brain want to say something else.
I think it's Bowman!
What?
I just thought I'd pretend to be Edith Bowman. Who would have thought the fucking 75th would be the hardest one?
Okay?
Who would have thought the 75th would be the one that fucking finally makes me lose my mind?
That's a bit weird.
That's a bit fraudulent.
That puts us all in a little bit of an uncomfortable position.
Wow. But that means I don't feel so bad about having sex with her.
Is that what that means? I forgot that's the other wank meat. I don't know what that means actually. What?